year at the horse park. Jen Reutz joins us. Jen, good morning.
Hey, how are you? It's actually the fifth year we're at the horse park.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's one of the great successes around second careers, retraining, off-the-track thoroughbreds. It's created a whole movement, a huge wake that it's created. And starting with Stuart Pittman's concept that so many people have contributed to, and now you're at the helm.
Yeah, well, we really appreciate you saying that. Yeah, Stuart Pittman started the organization about 10 years ago, and then 5 years ago, it kind of, our signature event morphed into what it is today, which is the Thoroughbred Makeover. It's the largest retraining competition for ex-race horses in the world. It's also the most lucrative. There's about $135,000 in available prize money. And what makes it so unique is that about 450 horses competing here are all in their first year after racing. So they're in their first year of retraining, and they've only been in retraining after racing for about 10 months. So the things that people can do with these horses in just such a short amount of time is incredible.
And that, you know, that part of it, speak to that proviso in the rules and in the system before we talk about the divisions and all the things that, you know, that comprise these, you know, these 5 days. What was the motivation to put a time stamp on this, that a horse had to be just off the racetrack?
Well, you know, there's competitions out there for any horse, you know, any breed, any discipline, and also for thoroughbreds competing in horse shows after racing. But we really wanted a mechanism to promote the retraining of the racehorses and also to generate more equestrians trying to get these horses off of the track. You know, there are so many horses that retire each year, but if you don't continue to cultivate the market of equestrians who want them, that market will grow stagnant and it'll, you know, overflow with as many horses populating the market and not enough people wanting them. So the goal of the competition was always to engage more equestrians and give them the tools they needed to take that intimidation factor out of retraining a horse themselves. So that's a lot of times the biggest barrier. They think, you know, like it's easier to buy a horse for a little bit more money that's already trained. But, you know, in everything, in horse training or in anything else, and like when you do something yourself, there's that certain sense of pride and satisfaction that comes with it. So this has really created a movement of teaching more people how to retrain racehorses off of the track for the show ring or for lesson barns or just for recreational riding. And it's essentially also created better equestrians in the riding world. So it's kind of a win-win for both.
How has the makeover changed the perception of the thoroughbred? Because there's always been, I don't want to call it a snobbish, you know, an elitism about the, you know, the horses that aspiring equestrians should look to as their mounts. And I do sense that with, you know, the number of applications, the growing number of applications annually, and, you know, the trainers that you award spots to, that you've won some hearts and minds, that basically that people don't have to necessarily spend $100,000 on a European warm blood for their 12-year-old aspiring equestrian.
Yeah, you know, it's a really good question and background that you offer, Steve, because it definitely has been kind of a scenario that's played out over the last, I'd say, 50 years, where thoroughbreds used to dominate the show ring, then they fell out of favor, and people started opting for warm bloods because you know, it's by and large equestrian sports or high-end sports where people don't mind dropping bigger money if they're going to win bigger prizes, you know? And so people started getting these warm bloods imported from overseas, and then the American market started catching up and producing really legitimate show horses. And they're awesome. I have nothing against them. They are beautiful and fun to ride, and they're great. But so are thoroughbreds, you know? And so the thoroughbred kind of through that process inadvertently fell out of favor because they come off of the track. You know, it can be more challenging to retrain a horse than to train it from scratch and to retool its brain to not just think about speed, but start focusing on everything from jumping to dressage to, you know, ranch work or barrel racing, polo, whatever they're retraining them for. And so this competition, you know, I definitely think the thoroughbred makeover and the retired racehorse project with all the clinics we do on how to retrain horses and all that all over the country throughout the year, I definitely think we've played a part in that mindset changing, but I think it's been a collective effort, really, of all these different organizations that, you know, retrain and adopt out horses, that raise money for organizations to do that, like TCA and TAA. And then we kind of play the role as marketing them to the equestrian world and educating equestrians about how to retrain them and giving them the skills and the tools they need to do that. And then giving them the platform and incentive to show what they've done with those horses. So, you know, they get these horses off of the track, and they start working with them each year, December 1st, and they have 10 months to retrain them. A lot of people get help from, you know, their amateurs or juniors, and they get help from professional trainers, or it's professional trainers who also compete. And over the 10 months, they really kind of hone into what that horse is good at and also what the rider is good at. And then they come here the first week of October, and it's like a coming together of so many different people. This year we've got people from 40 different states and 4 Canadian provinces, and they all come together under the banner of loving the thoroughbred. They love them as racehorses, and they love them as sport horses. And so it's neat to see them support one another, even though they're also competing against each other for a legitimate amount of prize money. It's like a graded stakes event, you know? But it's really neat to see how it's encouraged more and more equestrians to try their hand at it and be comfortable trying to retrain a horse instead of just show a trained horse. This year, for example, we have about 60% of our competitors who have never competed in our competition before, which is incredible because it's not a competition that most people can compete in every year because you have to have a new horse for the competition
right.
every year. So the fact that 60% of that 450 or so entries are new people who are trying this for the first time, I think speaks volumes about the snowball effect we're seeing.
How many trainers, I saw a number on the website and I didn't know if it necessarily referred to, but 670 plus people applied for a slot?
Yeah. So this year was the first year we had to limit our entries. You know, it's grown leaps and bounds every year as far as how many people apply to compete. And people apply in December and January, and then we announce who's accepted in February. And to apply, they have to fill out a rigorous application, they have to show a video of themselves riding, and they have to provide references. And one of those references needs to be from their veterinarian, basically stating that, you know, I would back this person as a good custodian of a horse, you know. And so that kind of gives us the bar to judge whether or not these people are in the position at this time to retrain a horse. And if they're not, then we help them find the resources to get to that level. So we've had some potential competitors who have applied, and based on the references and their videos, and if there's a question, we usually do a lot of follow-up work. If they're not at the point where we feel they'd be a good candidate to take a horse off the track and retrain it, we find someone in their area that can help them through the process. We invite them to come watch the competition, volunteer if they can, and we let them take part in a lot of our trainer webinars we do all through the year. So hopefully that hones their skills and gives them the resources to be able to participate in the future. But then that's also really raised the bar for, like, the caliber of trainers that we have each year.
Give everybody, for those that haven't heard us discuss the makeover before, give everybody the rundown of the divisions, the various disciplines that'll be on display. And I remind everybody, if you're anywhere close to Lexington and have the opportunity to go to the horse park this weekend, if you've never been to the horse park itself, it's just a spectacular day anyway, but for the makeover, a chance to really see all of these things happening and going from, you know, from spot to spot, lay out some of the disciplines that will be crowned champions by Sunday.
Yeah. So we've got 10 disciplines that people can choose to compete in. We've got barrel racing, competitive trail, dressage, eventing, field hunters, freestyle. We've got polo. They can compete in ranch work and work cattle, which thoroughbreds are surprisingly good at a lot of times, which is very impressive to me. And then we have show hunters and show jumping. So those are the 10 disciplines. And then the competition runs from today, Wednesday, and Thursday. Those are the preliminary rounds. So everyone's going through the competition these 2 days. And then on Friday is our educational day. So we do a clinic at 9 a.m. on Friday that has several professionals in the sport horse industry. And they get paired up with horses that are fresh off of the track that have not yet been retrained, and they walk the audience through what their approach is in that first ride, and then they also talk about what the approach would be to the training of those horses in the coming, like, few months. And then on Saturday, it's our championship day, so the top five finishers from each division will come back on a clean slate. They will recompete in front of the crowd, and will pick a champion of each division. And that starts at 8 a.m. and runs until about 4:30. And then when we're done going through all 10 disciplines, it takes about, 45 minutes per discipline. We then bring all of the winners back, and it's a text-to-vote competition. So all of the winners of each discipline have 3 minutes to showcase their horse to the audience at the horse park and also the live stream audience. And then people can vote via text for their favorite horse. So it's definitely a packed weekend, for sure. It's also opening weekend of Keeneland, which is always so much fun. So if people want to come out here on Thursday and Friday, they can see the preliminary rounds. And if they are not sure where to go, they're welcome to come to the show office or email info@retiredracehorseproject.org, and we'd be happy to set them up with someone who could take them around and show them the venue and the competition. Or if they want to come out before they head out to Keeneland on Saturday and catch a couple of the championship rounds, we'd love to have them do that too. It's a really fun day to watch.
Jen Reutz is with us talking about the Thoroughbred Makeover underway this morning at the horse park, and one of the absolute best stories to tell in and around aftercare and second careers and OTTB, off-the-track thoroughbreds, and it has spawned all kinds of imitators, and no, everybody's free and invited to imitate.
Yes.
No offense is going to be taken if you want to start your own makeover. But we just last week, I talked to Maggie Kimmett about the Real Rider Cup, all of these showcases. We just had this weekend the Take Two, New York's very successful program. And, you know, for those that like to attack the industry and criticize everything regarding the industry, this goes right into the face of that critique. There's been a nonstop effort to find second homes, to retrain, to repurpose thoroughbreds. They love having a job. They much prefer this to being a lawn ornament.
and everybody involved to be applauded and encouraged by, you know, what you and so many others have successfully done to find homes and second careers for off the track thoroughbreds.
Well, we so appreciate you saying that. And I would say too, if there's anyone, you know, like our industry is in kind of a precarious situation right now, I'll say. And, you know, if you can't come out here to the makeover, go on social media or go on our website. We are inundating our social media pages and our website with updates and photos from the competition and all of that. So if you can't come out here, but you still want to help us spread the word and just kind of put these positive stories out there, just share some of our stuff from our Twitter or our Facebook page or our website. You know, there's so many good stories. Like I just talked with Emma Mulvey, who's a trainer. She trains racehorses, and I was surprised to see her out here, and she is riding the first horse that she ever saddled and the first horse that gave her a win as a trainer. She's competing in the makeover, and there's so many good stories like that out here. So, you know, definitely help us spread the word far and wide, and I think a little by a lot of people goes a long way.
Well, retiredracehorseproject.org and RRP underscore TB makeover. If you just type in TB makeover, you'll find it. And Jen Reutz and so many. I mean, those in the community know each other. But if this is new to you, please take the opportunity. You can also go to tbmakeover.org. It gets you to the makeover event itself. There's the magazine that you get with the contribution, those that are looking to shop, there's the marketplace to find retrained horses for whatever possible use. You know, my reference earlier to, you know, to crazy prices. My friend Andy that I grew up with, he lives in North Carolina. His daughter's become an equestrian. And he says to me, you know, my daughter's outgrowing her horse and we're going to need to find another one. And, you know, I said, well, I'll get you whatever you need. And he said, well, how much? I said, how much? They said, whatever. I said, I could get you one for zero. I could get you one, whatever. They had spent like $70,000 on a European import for their daughter. And I said, Andy, I said, what are you doing? I said, we got thoroughbreds. We got thoroughbreds that of all shapes and sizes that you know that might not have cost you anything. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just
I know.
Crazy.
Well, and you know, we have about 150 horses of the 450 competing out here who are for sale, and a lot of these trainers get them off the track for, you know, $1,500, $2,000, $2,500. We track all of this, and every year the price on average that they pay goes up about $100 from when they get them off the track, but then they sell them for, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. I've so far I know of four horses that after they're done competing at the makeover are sold for between $15,000 and $20,000. So for a trainer that's training the horses over 10 months, that's a great return on their investment. But then for the equestrians who are buying them, they're used to paying more for an imported horse,
yep.
So it's a deal for them too. So it's definitely elevating the value of these horses after racing.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Jen, it's always a pleasure, and we'll remind everybody the opportunity to see this for yourself at the Thoroughbred Makeover today through Sunday at the Horse Park. Best of luck to everybody, and we'll update folks next week as to the winner. Last year was the Polo Pony, right?
The year before last was the Polo Pony, trained by a 17-year-old kid. Last year was a horse that was an eventer that was retrained by an Olympic alternate. So it literally runs the spectrum of who's training these horses. And I think that horse is now competing on the national stage, and hopefully will start competing internationally in the next couple of years. So, yeah, these horses go on to do big things.
Tremendous. And the Thoroughbred Makeover is presented by the Thoroughbred Charities of America that does such a tremendous job. And there's the vendor booth and so much going on. Take advantage. And the entire industry appreciates it. Jen, thank you.
Thank you.
Jen Reutz and The Makeover. And it all started with the concept of Anne Arundel County Executive Stuart Pittman. Somebody that has got good ideas and executes them and is now doing it for citizens of Anne Arundel County. Let's take a break. We've got a bunch of things happening, including some news on the Breeders' Cup front. I want to get that in. I've got to get Seth Merrow in. I don't know if we're going to have opportunity to I wanted to get to Bill Downs, but he was in the car. We'll see. Maybe we'll get Bill with a couple of pushes. There's a very good late pick four at Indiana today, including the two Indiana bred stakes, the Gus Grissom and the Richmond. Back after this, last half hour on this busy Wednesday at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porchbills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porchbills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. With Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, 25 minutes to fill out on this busy Wednesday here on Sirius XM. Rain rolling in here to the Capital District, and I imagine that Seth Merrow is back in the Capital District himself. Good morning.
Yes, yes, yes. Back. We were down at Belmont on Saturday.
I saw that. That's right. You sent out the breathless waiting for the steward decision, in fact.
Yes, I had Shug looking at the board and Todd looking at the board, and unfortunately that came down to a DQ kind of decision. I was maybe on the outside looking in. I thought the horse had to come down given the margin. I mean, if you look at the head on, they moved out, you know, four paths. And so I was talking with other people in the winner circle as they were looking, and I said, yeah, I think just because, I mean, it was, you know, inches really. To me, it had to, but then on social media went berserk, went wild. I always like to break it down percentages. I would have said 70-30 for the DQ. So, I mean, it wouldn't have been egregious had they not done it, but to me it tilted in favor of the DQ. But as I said, it was unfortunate that it kind of came down to that. But nice elevated win for Code of Honor, and I think Vina Rosso obviously walks away with no disgrace and defeat and moves on, you would assume. You have to assume goes on to the Breeders' Cup because of the nice win he had at Santa Anita earlier. Now Grenig is reporting that Code of Honor is headed out there too, so it'll be fun to see those two come back out in Southern California.
Well, as I was referring, in fact, as we were taking the break, as you were coming on, and I said Breeders' Cup news, and that was the news that is going to get the most attention certainly today, and pretty much every day now there's going to be either decisions or liens or horses that withdraw from consideration, etc., and that includes Code of Honor going ahead and committing to the Breeders' Cup Classic, and there's not just potential for him to extend this winning streak, but also capture the three-year-old championship honors, even if he weren't to win, I would think. Right, Seth? I mean, if he puts in a big effort in the Classic and loses to an older horse, to a Vino, Rosso, in a rematch, and that's probably one of the best storylines of the Breeders' Cup Classic now, the two of them hooking up again. But if an older horse wins and puts in a good showing, how is he not three-year-old champion?
Yeah, after Saturday, to me it's kind of even, Steven. And if they voted tomorrow, I would be really interested to see, because I think some voters would look at, Maximum Security under the line first in the Kentucky Derby, but got DQ'd, and Code of Honor gets moved up on a DQ. So I would be really interested to see where they go. But you're exactly right. He goes out to Southern California. He wins. A lot of I was kind of surprised. A lot of people after Saturday thought he was Code of Honor, I'm talking about, was kind of a shoe-in for a three-year-old at this point, given that Maximum Security is now kind of on the sidelines, and you put the Travers and the Jockey Club against older horses. But as I say, in my mind, it's kind of even, Steven. I would really have to sit down and kind of review the races and whatnot if I were voting today. But a good Breeders' Cup performance, certainly you would have to think, puts him across the finish line for the three-year-old Eclipse. Travers, Jockey Club, Gold Cup, and a good performance out in Southern California. A win, it's a slam dunk, a win. And the there's talk horse of the year. That, to me, is a little bit tough, given what other horses would, Midnight Bijou, can she complete the undefeated campaign? That would certainly, Bricks and Mortar. I think there are some other interesting horses in the conversation. It's fun that they elected, because I don't know whether it was a done deal that Shug and company would go out to Southern California and try, but I'm glad they did. And it was, you talk about Breeders' Cup news. How often is jockey news really that shocking or notable? But I think the Baffert announcement on Mike Smith and McKenzie was kind of an eye-opener within the past day or so.
That was 1-5. That Smith was coming off McKenzie, because there was plenty of dissatisfaction even before Saturday, and I with all appropriate respect, there was no question that he was coming off, and actually to the Baffert and the Pegram team's credit, you know, to make that decision and let Smith, you know, get off to find a classic, you know, a different classic mount. That's to their credit that they didn't drag this out. But there was not much doubt that he was coming off the horse. We're waiting. We're going to wait and see on a few 3-year-olds that are weighing things between the Dirt Mile and the classic, like War of Will. Cassie wasn't. You can tell he wasn't completely disappointed with War of Will's Pennsylvania Derby effort, but I think he would have liked to have seen, you know, a little bit more of a pointed try. Owendale, coming out of the Oklahoma Derby win, is in the same situation, evaluating whether they'll cut back with the Rupp Racing representative or if they'll stretch out. Coming off the Oklahoma Derby win. And one move that we speculated, Seth, I think even you and I brought this up, coming out one of the last 2 weeks of the Saratoga season, how quickly some East Coast connections might venture to California to train over the surface. And one such decision is with Mottoli, who's already out there and who yesterday got his first gallop in at Santa Anita. And given, you know, how deep the track is and, you know, how they're trying to keep it slow and with the eye on safety, I think being out there is going to count for a lot, especially given what happened to the East Coast Invaders in the Pacific Classic. They were basically, you know, buried up to their knees in a deep, slow racetrack at Del Mar, and I think Santa Anita is appearing the same way. All you got to do is look at those main track times, which you never in your life would think that California main track racing could, you know, post times like we've been seeing out there.
Yeah, and I think I read Midnight Bijou is out there already. So folks are, yeah, as you say, trying to get some work over the track. That's never a bad idea, no matter what the venue, really. Either fly in right over the race and just pop that way, or you're there for a while so the horse can get kind of acclimated. And I have no argument with that. I like to see that better. It'll be interesting to see where those three-year-olds go. I've liked Owendale all along, and I went with him at Remington on Sunday just because I was kind of married to him, so I was happy to see him win Sunday night. And I think if you're gonna, you have a 3-year-old where you're on the fence, this is a year where, boy, take a shot at the classic. It's just, you know, it's not a field of world beaters by any means. So it's going to be fun to see. I think they'll have a pretty good field, competitive field, good in that good size, then it'll be a kind of a fun competitive race, but it will depend on some of these choices people make. I want to toss out one other thing, and it's actually tied into Baffert, but another great jockey story over the past weekend was John Velasquez, who, you know, you and I at Saratoga obviously talked about it. He got off to such a slow start at Saratoga, and then he completely turned around, not just at Saratoga, but he went out at Chicago, he won at Del Mar, and he's just been on a roll, and he set and tied and passed that all-time career graded stakes record, and he passed it out in Southern California on the Baffert 2-year-olds, and then came right back. And I'll tell people, I talked to him on my show on a Thursday. People can find it on the Capital OTB YouTube channel. It was the Thursday after the Travers, and had him on the show, and we talked for about 25 minutes. But there was a nice little conversation. I was asking about those kind of things, being out in Southern California and having to turn around quickly and kind of take the red eye, and what the game plan is then, and how do you get sleep and whatnot. And people can find that. It's an interesting conversation, but that's what happened. He not only wins the stakes out in Southern California, but comes back in Midnight Bijou and Code of Honor. I mean, he's been on a roll over the past month and a half. It's just, yeah, you have to applaud it. Plus, he's a really nice guy, and so it's easy to root for him.
I thought, you know, when you did qualify it by mentioning Baffert and, of course, sweeping the 2-year-old events with Johnny. But I thought you were headed toward Abel Cedillo. There was nothing, in fact, but these kinds of stories literally throughout the country, Seth. It was I stressed this immediately on Monday, and I haven't even had a chance to fully follow up from Sunday night in Oklahoma, and the fact that Steve Asmussen and Rafael Santana, Ricardo Santana, won seven races. Seven.
He likes Remington, clearly. And
well, yeah.
But as you say, there was other stories like that over the weekend as well. Being in New York, I was focused on the John Velasquez story and the whole family there, as they typically are on big days coming into the winner's circle. And it's just been fun to see over that last month and a half how hot he got and how he has continued on, you know, the top of his game over the past six, since the middle of the Saratoga meet. And yeah, it wasn't just Saratoga, and it hasn't just been New York. He's been popping out of town and winning big races.
Well, and it was going out of town that actually jump-started him.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he came back to Saratoga and started to win races in bunches. It was very strange. The other name that I'll repeat from the weekend, Trevor McCarthy, who won five overall and four stakes at Laurel. Sedillo, of course, we really stressed over the last couple of days, Johnny D and John White yesterday, Tom Knust handling his book. And, even to a lesser extent, Edgar Zayas, he won two of the three FTBOA races down at Gulfstream, including the mild upset with 260 for Gary Barber and Cassie. That was in the My Dear Girl. I mean, virtually everywhere you looked, there were these multi-win days for riders. Paco Lopez had a big day at Monmouth, which he does on a regular basis. Patrick Husbands swept the two graded stakes Saturday at Woodbine. It was kind of a big jockey day and weekend. I didn't look at Jockey Talk 360 who their jockey of the week was.
Oh, that would be interesting.
It'd have to be a tough choice.
Didn't I read Zayas won the recently concluded Gulfstream meet? Wasn't he the top jock on there?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. That too. Yeah, very much. Well, listen, every time you look, tremendous stories week in, week out, and we're right in the wheelhouse, Seth, obviously, with Keeneland opening Friday and another round of Breeders' Cup wins and your ins. I mean, to give everybody a handle, on Friday at Keeneland, obviously, you've got the Alcibiades for the Juvenile Fillies. You've got the Phoenix for the Sprinters. Then into Saturday, the Champagne for the two-year-olds, the Hirsch for the Turf, the Breeders' Futurity at Keeneland. For the two-year-old boys, the First Lady for either Philly and Mare Turf or the Mile, the Shadwell Mile itself, the TCA for the Philly and Mare Sprinters. These are all the wins and your ins. A lot of people looking forward to Chancelot versus Omaha Beach in that Santa Anita Sprint Championship. And then on to Sunday, the Flower Bowl for Zet and Futurity in New York. Philly and Mare Turf, for Zet for the two-year-old girls, and the Futurity for the Turf Sprint Division, which also that Indian Summer at Keeneland on Sunday is going to feed into. The Bourbon, of course, for the two-year-olds, the Juvenile Turf, the Jessamine on Wednesday as well for the girls. You've also got the Speakeasy, which is the Turf Sprint for the two-year-olds on Sunday, and that's in California, and then the Spinster for the Distaff. So there's your win and your ins.
Yeah, and it's that time of year, obviously. Kicked in really last week down in New York as well, and out in Southern California, and in Kentucky with the Lucas Classic and whatnot. I don't know the Kentucky races, how many contenders are going to come out, but it's that period where we're in these kind of Breeders' Cup prep area where horses are, it's going to be worth taking a look and seeing if you can find something that was a little bit intriguing that was maybe under the radar. I mean, obviously, Midnight Bijou is not under the radar. She looked great, and the two coming out of the Jockey Club Gold Cup. But over the last weekend and this weekend down at Keeneland and some of the other venues. It'll be worth kind of, as I say, seeing if you can find something a little bit sneaky maybe coming out of some of these races.
Well, the other New York action, you mentioned Bisou, you know, for a four-horse field, as it turned out, we ended up with a very good Vosburgh. Forense Fire and Imperial Hint shoulder to shoulder. And, oh boy, I said to Andy yesterday, it didn't seem to me that Imperial Hint was ahead in the late stages anywhere but when the photo was taken.
Yeah, that was one of those that's down. Ooh! and that was, you know, that was the second of those where at the start of the day, just walking around the facility talking with folks, people were like, yeah, Midnight Bijou shoe-in, Imperial Hint shoe-in, and Imperial Hint short field of only four. So, you know, three squares on your pick plays, and they both turned out to be great races. Obviously, the Imperial Hint Forense Fire race, it's a nose margin. Midnight Bijou pulled away a little bit more at the end, but the top of the stretch, Wildcat was giving her all she could ask for. So the two races that you thought were going to be, kind of shoe-ins, both turned out to be pretty nice races, fun races on the afternoon amongst four races. The one that was the kind of the toss-up turned out that way with Structure getting it done for Chad Brown. And I didn't have Structure in my mix, but as I handicapped as the day was progressing, I said, you know, this is the kind of horse. The buyer is a little light, but it's one of those races where maybe you don't pay that much attention because they can always step forward and improve in the second career start, and that's what he did. So he'll be an interesting horse to watch going forward on the grass as well.
How much action will you involve yourself in at Keeneland?
You mean, have I looked at opening day?
Well, no. I mean, how much play does Keeneland get from you?
Oh, just on a regular basis? Oh, quite a bit. Yeah. No, I definitely look. I mean, it's high quality, which is always fun and good, and there's more consistency there when you're playing. But B, there's just so many New York players that, so if you're following from Saratoga, and I should note that it was validated again down at Belmont on Saturday, but boy, the Saratoga meet has turned out to be very productive this year on the stakes side. But there are so many of those New York Saratoga players that wind up at Keeneland, it's just logical to jump down and follow.
Well, and we should also mention, looking ahead, not just to Keeneland, but looking ahead to Sunday, and we'll get I'll probably reach out tomorrow to Nick Luck, tomorrow or Friday. Nick, of course, part of the NBC coverage, and get some opinions. I mean, the arc on Sunday, and I'm just, what time does, let me see, do we know what, I'm sure we know, they know what time, but I'm just seeing.
Yeah, I got it here someplace.
Do you have it? I'm curious, because I've got it on, I've got the odds, I pulled up Odds Checker earlier this morning, and I haven't talked about this, but, enables, let's see, she's essentially 3-5 on the board. Japan, second choice at 5-1. Sotsas is anywhere from 5-1 to 11-2. I make that 6. I'm sorry, 6-1, 7-1. So a pretty heavy favorite to win yet again, which would be unbelievable. So don't forget about Enable on Sunday.
Yeah, and I haven't put it up yet. I'll put it up on Equidaily right after the show, but I pulled up an article from, I think it was Sporting Life, that talked about the other horses who had 1-2 arcs, and most of them retired subsequently, but Trev 1-2, and then went into that third arc as the favorite. Wound up, I think, fourth. So that's kind of an interesting recent precedent. I just think Enable is so good, though. I mean, that it's going to be a fun story to follow on Sunday.
Well, and now I'm on their website, actually, on the Longchamp, and
10:05 our time.
Thank you very much. All right, 10:05 Sunday morning. Is Capital OTB going to?
We are. We are
going to show it. Okay. Yeah. There you go.
My show will just be underway, so we'll cut to that and watch a little arc and come back and have the remainder of the show.
Will you be wearing a beret and maybe one of those French looking T-shirts with the stripes?
Oh, and the little kerchief around my neck.
Yes, like LeBeau. There you go, like LeBeau.
Oh, I like that. Well, I hadn't thought about it. I'll have to shave my mustache down to pencil thin.
Yes.
And have to complete the whole look. Yeah, okay. And I'll mime the whole show.
That's very good. Well done. Did you got something for today, by the way, before we go?
I looked at the late pick four today. I'm trying to see where my PPs are.
At Belmont?
You
know, I was hoping that we'd get a chance to get Bill Downs in, but we're going to run out of time. Indiana today has got a really nice sequence, and highlighted by the two Indiana bred stakes, and then there's a nice allowance race and a maiden special that closes it out. So Indiana today, too. Don't ignore Wednesday's very frequently their best card. But what are you doing at Belmont?
Yeah, I'll reiterate that. When we used to do the weekday show, I would have on Bill or Nancy or Rachel and talk on Wednesday. It's fun, the weekday stakes races. That's a little juice. Taking off in race five, optional claimer, starter allowance. I can't get past the one entry. One and 1A, 3, 5, and 4. Dark Money is clearly the better of the entry, and we'll see if they both go. Different jockey's name, so I'd assume, but even if it's one or the other, I think even Clench probably has a little bit of an edge on the field. So I'm starting to kind of chalky, but if you wanted an alternative, you know, 6-1, if that holds up, I thought Hardcore Folklore on some improving numbers off the claim, trainer's okay off the claim. I thought this one had the potential to maybe step forward and be a player. And Brush Country, it's one of those that maybe last time was just a little bit of a wake-up or a rebound maybe to better form. Moves up just slightly, but I thought Brush Country at 6-1. So if you wanted a couple of alternatives, maybe the 3 or the 5, but it seems like the one entry has the edge in there in race 5. Race 6, I have to admit, that to me is kind of a dartboard race. I could have gone in any direction. I went 6-3, 5-1. I wound up in Life in Shambles just on the back class, and I'm hoping with a little dose of class relief, he kind of remembers some of that back class and gets back to that. But again, I don't have a strong opinion in there, much confidence. I could have used any of mine with almost an equal amount of confidence. I went 6-3, 5-1 in the 6, in the 7, 5-1, 2-3. Again, I'm kind of a favorite in there as well with Lemonis. But Siding Spring and Sentry, 7-2, 9-2. I think they're both players. I don't think, you know, the morning line has Lemonis at 8-5, and the other two, as I say, 7-2 and 9-2. I'm not sure the talent spread is that much. So maybe, you know, use the 3 and hope one of them, one of the longer prices gets through there in the pick. And then finally in race 8, I have it 1-8, 5-6. Augusta Moon, I thought over the past couple of starts, has been pretty good. This is now a second off the claim start. And last time, we had a good second against similar company. Kyoto, 3-1. I'm going to cross out the race 2 back off the turf, obviously. With the turf, I think that horse is, again, a player in here. And O'Malley for Jason Service at 5-1. First off the claim for Jason Service, this may be the one that had some value to the play. So the 8th race, 1-8, 5-6.
I think you want to include Tipple in there, Phil Serpy, the 4.
All right.
Add a little Tipple.
I'm not convinced, but I'll back up maybe with that one. That's what makes it interesting.
Exactly. That's why we love it. Seth Merrow, everybody. Seth Merrow 2 on Twitter and at Capital OTB on a regular basis. Every time you look up, there he is.
Harness Track tomorrow. Come on down. We're at the Harness Track tomorrow afternoon. Live on the road. So swing on by. Handicap some sulky side.
Very fun. We'll see. Maybe. What's tomorrow's Thursday, right?
Yeah.
right, maybe. Maybe. That might be fun.
We'll leave a chair open for you.
There you go. I'll be like Elijah. Seth Merrow, everybody. And there's your Wednesday get-together, which just flew by. Seth and Jen Reutz, Sid Fernando, Pete Fornital earlier, and Chuck Simon helping us understand what's going on with that deal at Calder. Racing action this afternoon here on Sirius XM. HRRN coverage. Tune in for that, and we'll talk to you in the morning. Thanks, everybody. Good luck.
Go killing all the bees.